Richie Havens with Darkness, Darkness. This was the tune that first came out in 1969 by the Youngbloods. They recorded it first, and then Havens did his version, which we just heard, in 1994 on the album Cuts to the Chase. Havens died at his home in Jersey City, New Jersey, on April the 22nd, 2013. He was 72 years old. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we cannot but pay attention to the cataclysmic events of the last week, getting more and more foreboding by the day. And I'm referring to, of course, the events going on in the so-called Middle East. I have been searching and reading everything I could put my hands on to provide what I think is not just a comprehensive explanation of what has gone on, but also to have something of a feeling of authority in reporting. The materials I'm reading definitely do not come across as materials that are independent or that are taking a look at a major world development, not from the point of view of whether they're telling this country's story or that country's story, but whether they're telling the story. Everything I read, my hackles are up, because it's tremendous propaganda. And this you have to watch out for, especially given not only the countries involved, but the actors involved. As you know, the chief military leader for in that area was assassinated last Thursday. And we've heard many, many versions of the story. But at this point, let's set those aside for the moment. And let's react viscerally from what we feel, because we have been in this place many, many times before. Although from our perspective, one of the main actors, and I'm referring to Donald Trump, has not come under close scrutiny, not like this before. And his actions and reactions are telling us quite a lot. We shouldn't be taking sides in that traditional sense where you favor this group of people or you favor that person over others, and therefore your analysis will be skewed. You're taking as objective a look as you possibly can, relying not on the reports themselves, but relying on your own intuition of what you know, of what you have experienced before as a consumer of information brought to all of us through several processes that essentially instruct us on what our attitudes should be, who we should favor, what we should find. And I'm saying suspend all of that, at least for the moment. And let's ask some very important questions that have not yet been asked. And if they have been asked, they have not yet been answered. And from my perspective, I'm more interested in the U.S. response than anything else. What is the U.S. response to this whole saga, the Sikh saga? We are encouraged to have no particular feelings at all. We are encouraged to think, well, you know, what happened was provoked, and the United States is just simply reacting in a situation that, even as a target, this is the thinking, even as a target, the United States has just cause for its actions, and frankly, it does not need to explain itself. If explanations are to be had, if explanations are warranted, that would happen in closed session, perhaps in a congressional hearing or something. But we do not need, this is the thinking, we don't need to come before the world and explain anything. We have no reason, the United States has no reason to explain itself. And even if it does have a reason to explain itself, certainly not to the riffraff that are demanding explanations. It will explain itself in a venue or in venues commensurate with its stature as a leader of the world. I have different thoughts about that. But what I do know is this. We are once again talking about the conduct of a president who insists he is not accountable to anyone for anything at any time. We are witnessing the end result, based on the president's actions, of the full range of permissions he has been granted so far since taking office. Whether it is just to leave him alone, whether the refusal to engage him, to demand explanations, to compel him to obey the Constitution of the United States and other world bodies. And by their actions to show that the primary concern they have is for the country. It's not about Trump and what he wants to do and what he thinks ought to be done. It's not about leaving him alone. Now we have to demand from them accountability for their inaction. This late thing that they're doing, trying to impeach him and so forth. You know, that is so pitiful. It is so pitiful, a response to the essential questions that were raised about Trump years ago. Congress, I believe, is accountable for that. The utter failure until this half-hearted attempt to rein him in via the threat of impeachment. But by the time they decided to give that a try, this president had gone off the rails a long time ago, had shown the troublesome signs of a person who is mentally defective and incapable of leading this country. And they have to explain why, despite the obvious signs of crisis in his head, he's got a lot of wars going on in his little head, they still allowed him the widest berth possible to do whatever he wanted to do. So I'm looking at the crisis now as a natural byproduct of a man who could not be tamed. It isn't because he's so powerful. It is because Congress was so cowardly. And the situation deteriorated and deteriorated to the point where we truly could say we have no idea who's running the country. He seems to be taking advice from all over the place, from Netanyahu, from right-wingers, from people who want the world to return to its ultra-right-wing self. People, when we would say on this program, the country is an agitated state, and most people can't believe what they're witnessing. Well, you know, at some point, somebody's going to have the courage to say, this man must be put in treatment and is a threat, an ongoing threat to the security of this nation. Nothing personal. It's just that there is no natural, normal way to explain how he approaches governance. And we are all dangling on a string because we know that at some point something cataclysmic will happen and we will be forced then to deal with the reality we had known for quite a while and ignored. No matter how they frame this crisis, no matter how they cast it, it comes down to the same issue we've been talking about for years. This man, Donald Trump, has taken this nation in a direction that could only be described as insane. And yet the people, that's us, have given him permission to do what whatever he wants to do. They're saying, well, that's not true. As you see, we have him up on charges. Well, I discussed the fallacy of that. This Johnny-come-lately reaction, and then you formalize it into something that looks meaningful, called impeachment charges, articles of impeachment, call it whatever you want to. You're way late, and you're way insufficient. The damage has already been done. For the years he has been in office doing whatever he wants to do, and you people let him. So don't stand up on your haunches now as leaders in Congress. You're still lying. You're still avoiding the issue. The only reason that the Democrats rustled up something vaguely similar to nerve to charge Donald Trump with two of the scores of charges that he should have been facing, they came up with two. They could only find two relevant ones, and both of them have to do with protecting Joe Biden. Has nothing to do, they have nothing to do with examining the damage that the president has done to this country. You come up with a silly charge of obstruction of Congress. Okay, so what? He obstructed Congress. You're not even taking that seriously to proceed with a bona fide prosecution. The charges that you have come up with so far have to do with protecting who you want to put in office, who you feel obligated to put in office and protect. Joe Biden and his son, which is the same thing, Joe Biden. All these charges, including, for example, like what happened just on Thursday, when this military leader, revered, regionally revered, was, I will use Trump's language, he was taken out. Who says that? He was taken out. That's the language of a common thug. Yeah, man, we took him out. That's not the language of a head of state. When you mean you ordered his assassination, you didn't take him out. You ordered his assassination. You ordered all of your troops who swear allegiance not to you, but to the Constitution of the United States. You changed them into regular, ordinary hitmen and thugs, and ordered them to, as you say, take him out. That's what this country has come to. And they're still trying to explain the validity of this. Yeah, well, he was evil, he was this, he was that. But I don't remember any conversations in Congress about this. about the fear of the rise of such a horrible person. I don't remember testimony being given so that we can all understand how evil he was. I don't remember even a conversation about what is the best way to defuse the situation. Now, no such discussions. You have a phone call, and next thing you know, here's Donald Trump from Mar-a-Lago, that decaying property that they keep patching up with new paint. He's in Mar-a-Lago having a party. And by phone, he gives the order like, you know, a cheap mobster type. Yeah, take him out. And we have reached, this is what we ought to be discussing. This is the catastrophe where someone we know is mentally unstable, and I'm being kind using those words, by telephone can cause massive movements of troops who have no reason to be going anywhere to take anybody out. And after the call, he goes back to entertaining his friends. Making them feel special to be in an all-slave quarters, patched up time and again because he's too cheap to really renovate. And they are to be aware at all times that this is a unique privilege. They are with the president at the White House of the South, as he calls it. They don't care what happens. Just pass the hors d'oeuvres. We're responding to this whole thing the wrong way. This should cause intense scrutiny of the so-called president of the United States. You see all the evidence that the criticisms have been on point. Now we hear silly Nancy Pelosi talking about, well, I didn't get a call saying that there was going to be this much military action. I didn't get a call. Of course you're not going to get a call. You have been dismissed as being irrelevant a long time ago. This administration doesn't care about what you think or what should happen. You knew. You endorsed and sanctioned the occupancy of the White House by a total fraud, a person who has no reason to be there. You didn't, and you haven't said boo. The things that you should have been concerned about, you and your fellow Democrats, if you want to fight, fight the Republicans. Fight the cutting off of support for people on public assistance. Fight the opposition to a living wage. Fight the lack of affordable housing. Fight for the reversal of the trend in the educational system. There are lots of fights you can have, but you're not fighting those fights. You are now totally and utterly and obsessively concentrating on making sure Joe Biden doesn't get caught up as he ought to be in this legal morass. What did you know? How come your son is making about $80,000 a month in an overseas company all the way in Ukraine, and you don't know about it? You have no clue about it? How he is, here's a person who was a drug addict. Deep into drugs with his mind basically taken over by it. And you know nothing about it. He goes all the way to find a hiding place in Ukraine. The same place, and with dealing with the same people that the Trump's people were dealing with. And you expect people with a thinking brain to set that aside. Here's Nancy Pelosi using all these resources. She's not fighting for a living wage. Those monies are not directed toward a major campaign to deal with improvement of some of our social maladies that people are experiencing here. No, it's to spare Joe Biden, because they've decided he is the guy who ought to emerge from all of this as the leader of the Democrats. The next leader in the White House should be Joe Biden. And you spend all this time, all this money, you're interviewing witnesses, you're gathering documents, and all this garbage. You're lying to people. You're very clear about what you're after, because even your own future depends on you standing firmly behind Joe Biden, the guy who must be president. So I say, let's talk today about what you observe in this whole debacle that is unfolding. Don't come to any conclusions yet. It's too early. Just observe. Really, really observe what is going on. And let's talk about what, based on your observations, you really think. You take this break and come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888 right after this. Remember, whatever it is they're presenting to us as reality, you say, thanks so much for your help, but I'm not taking it. I have my own mind. I have my own brain. Thank you very much. We'll be right back. That brings my heaven. I have passed the edge of sadness. Now I hide the depth of fear. Darkness, darkness, be my blanket. Cover me with endless night. Take away the pain. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about being in the midst of, as Churchill would say, an enigma wrapped in a puzzle, wrapped in a mystery. And we are supposed to act accordingly, as if that is the only thing we need to know, and we're taking instructions from the very people who are trying to mess with our brains. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
Okay, Khalil, how are you?
I'm well, and I hope every other sentient being who pays attention and attends your program as well also.
Thank you.
Well, just a couple of things. You know, it appears now that the president has crossed the mark from being a sociopath into a psychopath, which means he's willing to inflict harm with no qualms about it. And that's unfortunate, but we were warned by Dr. Mandy Lee and other folks.
Yes, we were. Yes, we were.
And this is one of the questions I have. Why is the for-profit media ignoring the obvious? I mean, you know, people who don't have standing, but who were in the mental health field, we've been saying this, but when you don't listen to a prominent person who has, she had to clear, when she came out a long time ago, she had to clear that with her department. I guarantee you, she had to clear that at her job before she could speak out like this. So this is not a joke. This is not silly. And this is not conjecture. And so this is a real problem, but we were warned because this administration and the particular head is willing to pull all of us down into a war to protect himself. And it's very disturbing.
And it's getting more and more apparent that he is deteriorating psychologically. He's freaking out.
Absolutely. And once again, Eutrice, why are news professionals, why are they ignoring this?
Well, they don't own the systems that they work for. Most news organizations have a vested interest in one way or the other with this administration. We've noticed that the game being played is appear to ask questions, but, you know, don't ask hard questions, but appear to be doing that, and that would be enough. That way we could continue to count on the budgets, the advertising budgets of the army, of the armed forces, the millions and millions of dollars that they dispense. We can get lots of money from this administration to keep us in line, and we will gladly oblige. There's no real journalism going on now.
Well, you know, I guess that's back to the money. Back to the money. It's all about the money then. And the other issue with the Bidens and the fighting over these gas pipelines. Now, if we, you know, honestly, they are all corrupt. It appears that way because if we look back at the research, Hillary Clinton was interested in those natural gas pipelines. So basically, it was like a void, a vacuum. It's almost like drug territory. Someone was going to have to take it over.
We are going to talk about Hillary Clinton in great detail very shortly. You'd see her interest, her and Bill, in carving up Puerto Rico from one end to the other to lay these gas lines. That's what they're interested in Puerto Rico. Other than that, Puerto Rico could go to hell in a handbasket as far as they're concerned. It just has these reserves, and everybody's fighting for it, including the Clintons, and especially the Clintons. They have a great love of energy. Yes.
Well, I will be looking forward to hearing that, and I'm also looking forward to hearing Charles Ortel soon.
Well, that's who's going to be doing it.
Oh, well, how about that?
Yeah. He's been working very long, very hard, and we will see in his presentations how sinister these folks are. You create a foundation with the intention, the specific intention of stealing money. And there's a lot of money to be had out there. From all over the world, they will come running to you with suitcases full of money. And you don't intend to do one thing that you said as a foundation. Not one. Oh, yes, it's coming.
Well, I hope he addresses the Trump Foundation, how it was shut down so quickly.
Well, the Trump Foundation never was a real foundation. It's just like the Clinton Foundation. These were not real foundations. They never obeyed the law. They just wanted it to look like they were obeying the law. But what they wanted, just like these charges of these made-up charges to dispel the myth of what they're really after, which is hiding Joe Biden, protecting Joe Biden. He's not the saint. He's not the acolyte that people think he is. And they find these ways of bending things to accommodate what essentially are their criminal activities and intentions. That's what it is all about.
You know, Utrice, I don't know how many new listeners you have, but to my ear, I'm sensing that you really have been honing in on corruption at high levels for the past couple of years. And you've been slowly, every day making a case.
What is corruption? But it's worse than that. It is the manipulation of people and a sinister way of duping them into thinking, oh, this person is really going to help us. Let's vote for that person. Let's protect our political assets. And the person is laughing, having great joy. How do you explain that we have $10 million missing from the so-called rebuilding effort in Haiti? And they said, oh no, we fulfilled our commitment. They built about three little shacks. And that's it. They have the clout, they have the network. That's where the energy goes, in building the infrastructure that protects them and all who concern them. That's where they invest their time and effort and energy, in creating a system that they can plausibly defend based on, you know, made up ideas about what they intend to do. No, as we will show, there are no records. There are no audits.
No records.
Not really. There are some things they say are records, but they don't account for themselves. They live in their own shadow world and they're fully protected.
Well, we're in trouble.
Yeah, well, we have been. That's what I've been trying to tell you. Thank you, Khalil, for getting us started today. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. How are you?
Okay.
I want to respond to your various points you made. He did. I listened to an interview with Lindsey Graham, and he did inform Lindsey Graham and a few others about this attack. And the interviewer said, did he communicate with any of the Democrats? And Lindsey Graham said, no. Why should he? You know, because, you know, of the climate. So that's one thing you had spoken about. Another thing I want to...
But it's not a legitimate explanation, you see.
Huh?
Lindsey Graham could get up and say whatever he wants to say. He knows, or ought to know, as a longtime member of the U.S. Senate, that there are procedures. You're not informed by a phone call that lasts for a couple of minutes.
No, I know that there are procedures, but when you said that he did not tell anyone, I was just pointing that out, that there were people who were,
Yeah, but understand, these people who were, quote, informed, were not the ones who should have been informed first. They're still playing with our minds. Who is Lindsey Graham?
I'm not saying this in defense. I'm saying this so that all the information could come to the table. The next thing I want to address is you spoke about this, the state of agitation, and the state of agitation. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
The state of agitation, we must be honest, you know, and let me keep reiterating, I am not a Trump supporter, but I believe in looking at the whole picture, and especially after what they did to Gaddafi, I'm not going to allow them to hide behind Trump, because that's what's going on. A lot of people are hiding behind Trump because they don't want to blemish the people they idolize. They don't want to blemish the first black president who looked so cool. This state of agitation is not due to Trump. It is due to the coup. And it's just that Trump did not have the cool to respond. And instead he responds to everything that's thrown at him with knee-jerk responses. The presence, if we were truly concerned about the possibility of war, why were we all calling Trump Putin's boy? Why were we all against two presidents of the two countries that could destroy the world from getting along? And every move he made to get along with Putin, we spoke against. Why were we not wanting two countries, Russia and America, to get along? We have to look at these things. And all of this climate of agitation went all the way back to 2016. And I think that's what we are ignoring. And another point you made about him being a gangster. Trump is no less a gangster than Obama, Clinton, Bush, or any of them were. It's just that he does not use euphemism. And I think it is better to have someone like him speak out. As a matter of fact, he's more transparent. What do you think it was when Hillary Clinton came on TV and said, "We came, we saw," and he was not? That was no less a gangster and a wicked way of speaking about the murder of someone than Trump saying we took him out.
I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I said the same thing. I'm not disagreeing with you at all on that point.
When Obama spoke of the killing of Bin Laden, which I don't think that occurred then, because there have been so many times when it was reported Bin Laden must have been like a cat, because it was reported that he was killed about four times. And when Obama announced the so-called killing of Bin Laden, it was during the time when it was close to re-election, and it was the least common denominator he used trying to drum up the support of the people like the Trumpites. I said, "Oh, we killed Bin Laden." Yeah, and I remember when Clinton was interviewed once, and he said, "We had a chance to kill him, and we should have killed him when we had that chance." So let us stop ignoring that they are all gangsters, that they all use the same language. But because people are so angry about the Clinton losing, nobody is speaking objectively. I just this is not a point, but I just want to throw something in. Remember when I don't know if you remember, you trees, but I keep notes and, you know, records. And I remember when we first talking about Joe Biden running, and I said to you, I said he's doing it for his ego, etc. And you said, this is a man with years of experience. He's been in politics for so long. Why would he want to be doing this? You know, you said that, Utrecht. And if you go into your records, you'll see that you said that. When I first mentioned that about Joe Biden.
This sounds alien to me in my own experience.
Not
about
you,
what I am likely if you to look say through, and not say.
If you go through your history, you see that I said that. Because
Even if you did, here's the thing. I'm not interested in who is right and who is wrong about
No, an assessment. I'm not saying that to say who's right or wrong. I'm just saying that we must be consistent in our thinking and speaking. This is not to indict you.
Well, I try to be consistent in my thinking. I don't recall saying whatever it is that you just pointed
and
out. I don't recall. That doesn't sound like me at all. But let's say I did say it. What does that do?
I'm saying that we should not flip-flop on these issues.
No. You're reacting. I was listening to you because you were going somewhere. Now you're becoming...
No. Don't see that I'm trying to say anything.
I'm saying, though, I tend to remember things like that. I would tend to remember things like that. Because I have it notated,
Utrecht. All I'm just trying to say, I'm just trying to point out how we are responding to all this. Because I'm
saying we should be very careful to be able to differentiate how we are behaving in one set of circumstances and how we are behaving in another, because there is an overarching interest in controlling how we behave, controlling how we think. At every given time, you know, we still are being managed in our thinking about Donald Trump.
But we who want Donald Trump to behave objectively are not behaving objectively. Neither are we speaking objectively, because we are all still in this emotional cauldron.
What I'm trying to communicate to you is, I am not concerned as to what is the reason we're doing things. I'm not concerned about that. I'm concerned that we should be,
if we want to come to objectivity.
We can't handle all these things at the same time. This requires summary action. You have to move fast. You have to make up your mind quickly. We've wasted way too much time analyzing and super analyzing, and we haven't gotten a clearer picture yet.
Let me make one more point. I had several more, but let me just say this. Utrecht, when I look at how many governments the United States have destabilized and wrecked, look at what they did to, imagine, Libya is completely dysfunctional right now. I'm trying to say to you, Utrecht, what is going on right here is what America does daily to other countries.
Okay, I agree with you. Now what?
They wreck other people's government daily. So why are we...
I agree with you, but now what?
Now what? Now, this is what, Utrecht. Reap what you sow. That's what. Reap what you sow. We love to talk about karma and all these things.
But you see, that would apply to the entity that controls. I'm asking from the point of view... Now what? From the point of view of the people.
Okay, from the point of view,
it does not solve anything to say, look what they've done. Yeah, well, we should expect that, because that's what
this is. This is what I would say from the point of view of the people. This is what I will say then. Let us say, it's just like, say, you breached, you have a breach, you know, you offended someone, and it's causing an escalation of animosity. And you say, okay, we need to put this to an end. And so, to put this to an end, this is what I will say. The people must come and say, and we who are the ones who have been studying the facts and analyzing should say, you know what? We caused the Donald Trump because we have allowed so much to
go
by.
But that was pointed out from the very beginning. That's my point.
But that's what we need to do now. We don't need to be attacking.
We
are not
learning.
We, the people, need to acknowledge that we caused it. You let Bush get away with murdering Iraqis.
And then what happens? The fact is, it is already fact. Whether you choose at this late date to recognize it, the people played a role in it, or whether you think that the people actually deliberately created this mess and therefore have some explanation, these things I am saying are no longer relevant questions because they've been proven. Before Trump came in, they were proven.
If we do not address these questions, it will continue. If we do not, it's just like this thing when we keep saying choose between the lesser of the two evils. And this keeps going on.
You're saying the lesser of two evils. I'm saying choose.
I'm giving you an example.
You have to choose evil of two lessers. That's what we have to get in our
heads. My point is this. I'm saying it's the same mentality when we keep saying, oh, we have spoken about that before. And the same mentality when we say, oh, choose between the lesser of the two evils when the election comes. And I'm saying to you, this is the way we keep behaving. So we have not moved further. You said, yes, we all are not.
We will not move further.
We will not move further until we address the issue. We will not move forward until we, the people, the whole American citizenry, address the issue.
We have to take a different look. We cannot say we will not do this until we do that. No, because the world works differently. You have to prioritize. And you have to say, of the 20 things that are extremely important, which five can we tackle? That's the difference in the way we should be thinking now. All right, we have 20 things. We cannot solve all 20 things. But we could work like hell on two of them and absolutely produce results on the two that we choose. But we're not choosing anything.
Because we keep satisfying this need
to give us permission to fail. We wouldn't even try it. We're not inclined to say, okay, let's do this way for the first time. We know there are 20 things out there, we can't handle it. We don't have the resources, we don't have anything that we would need to do a successful job. But there is one thing we could do. Let's do it. We don't even get that. We are preaching constantly, basically predictable failure, and telling people this is what you have to do, as if there's a sequence to success. There isn't. There isn't. You think back to how you growing up. Your mother had to run a household with 500 different things she had to get done during the day. By some miracle, by the end of the day, she got most of those things done.
Yes, Rutrice, but in hindsight, she will realize that there are things she could have done better, and there are things that if they had paid attention to...
Who cares?
Because it's
I'm not looking for perfection. I'm not interested in perfection.
The future. It sets the platform. That's the purpose of history.
You have to get real. Things I could have done better. No, I am satisfied. I, in fact, will be just beside myself with joy. If you could show me one thing, just one thing that you have done, that you did damn near perfectly, I will be happy. I'm not waiting for you to do all 20 things. I'm not expecting you to be superhuman, but I am expecting that you can select from all the things that you think you can do, offer yourself to, and bring it to fruition. You chose this one little thing and you went to town on it. I'll be happy as a lark. Well, this is the end of our program today. As I said, we will be coming to you in a short while and presenting to you a whole new analysis of the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation in specific. But I thank you so much for contributing today, and I urge you, keep your brain on. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye. The edge of sadness, now I hide the depth of